feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Do you ever get confused in times of trouble? You wonder why things are happening and you don't know what to do? That is where David finds himself in our story in 1 Samuel chapter 20. Saul is chasing David and trying to kill him, and David doesn't know why. In our story, we will learn why, and we will also see the value of a good friend. Let's now join Pastor John for our study.
1 Samuel this evening. Open up your Bible for our teaching tonight, beginning in chapter 20 of 1 Samuel. We left off seeing David on the run. David, a man after God's own heart. David, already anointed to be the king of Israel. David, one who caused Saul, who was the present king, to feel intimidated, jealous, and worried about David. Consequently, Saul was out to destroy him. Most of you know the story. We pick up in verse 1 of chapter 20. David fled from Nahoth in Ramah, the place where he went with Samuel the prophet in chapter 19. The place where Samuel took him to for refuge and safety. A place where prophets resided. He went there, stayed there, and now he comes and has this encounter, this discussion with Jonathan. Jonathan, of course, was Saul's son. Jonathan was next in line to be king according to the family dynasty. But Jonathan, a godly man, realized that God's hand was on David. And Jonathan stepped aside, if you would. He gave David his royal vestures as a symbolic act, saying, David, I understand that you're the man. You're the one that God has chosen. Now, David came and said to Jonathan, what have I done? What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father that he seeketh my life? Why is he throwing spears at me? Why is he so upset with me? Why is he out to kill me? David asks the questions that we often ask when we hit problems, when troubles come our way. What have I done? We hear David say. What's brought this about? Oftentimes we think it must be something that we did. Perhaps God is disciplining, chastening, correcting you, correcting me when things go wrong seemingly, when problems come, when troubles mount. But listen, it's not always about punishment or chastisement. Sometimes it's about preparation. And as we're going to see the story unfold, God is preparing David. He's knocking some rough edges off. He's getting David ready for the calling that is on his life, you see. Kind of like that little rock that was there on the side of the hill in Israel. Century after millennia, it sat there on the hillside, basking in the sun, enjoying the view when one day a landslide hit that little hillside, and this rock tumbled down with the dirt that was sliding down into the creek bed below. The rock lodged there. The creek bed was dry. The rock sat there and thought, well, I don't have the same view I had up on the hill, but this isn't all that bad down here. Then winter came, and man, the waters began to flood into that creek bed and picked up that little rock and began to toss Rocky round about, crashing him against other stones, and he was getting beat up and cracked a bit and all the rest. He was in agony. He was in pain. What's the deal, he thought. What have I done? What's wrong? When then came summer, and the waters abated, the waters disappeared, and he just sat there in the creek bed once again, basking in the sun, just enjoying the warmth that was beating on him. And then, well, you know what's going to happen. Fall rolls around, winter comes again, the waters rise and pick him up once more, and he's beaten against other rocks just like before. And he says, what have I done? And he gets kind of upset and feels confused and a bit depressed. And then, well, once more, winter fades, spring comes, and summer is here. Happy days are here again as he just basks in the sun. But then, well, you know the story. Once more, winter comes rolling around, and he gets picked up and beaten about. This goes on for years. It goes on for decades. It goes on for centuries. It goes on for millennia. And finally, one summertime, he's been beat up for so many hundreds of years. Just this constant beating up and constant being tossed about. But on this summer day, it's unlike any other one. Because you see, as he's laying there in the bed, finally at rest, just sort of resigned to whatever, to go with the flow, he feels a human hand pick him up. And a human hand says, this one will do just fine, as that human hand then walks a ways and puts that little rock, Rocky, who's now smooth as glass, into a leather sling. And round Rocky is whirled until finally, up in the air he goes and into Goliath's head. And he is a rock for the ages, folks, let me tell you. He goes down in history in the Rock and Roll Museum because he's the one that caused Goliath to roll that day when, hey, he realized then, that's why I was tossed around and that's why I was beaten up and that's why all this took place, because I was part of a divine plan, a grand design that God had intended for me all the time. Listen, God's working on David. He's knocking some edges off of David. The same thing is true for me. It's true for you too. Tribulation brings about patience, and patience brings about perfection, we are told. Let God do his work. Just go with the flow. But David does what we do. What have I done? What's going on? What is my sin? He says to Jonathan. Well, Jonathan said to him, ah, David, God forbid, thou shalt not die. You're not going to die, David. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it to me first. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It's not so, David. David, my dad isn't going to get you. I don't know how Jonathan explains those three spears that whizzed over David's head. But Jonathan, you know, family can be that way. Jonathan would say, you know, really, my dad's not going to hurt you. This won't happen. I guess Jonathan, to his credit, still wanted to believe the best about his dad, you see. You're not going to die. Dad's not going to get you. He'll tell me if he's out to get you, you see. Now, Jonathan is wrong here because Saul was out to get him. But Jonathan is also right, too. That is, hey, David's not going to die by the hand of Saul. So Jonathan is wrong on one hand, but right on the other. God has a plan, and that plan is not going to be thwarted by Saul. So too for you. So too for me. So for us congregationally, God has a plan. And nothing can cause that plan to come undone, you see. God knows what he wants to do with me. He knows what he wants to do with you. He's got us on track. And as long as we're walking with him, and as long as we have faith in him, nothing is going to derail you or me. In that, Jonathan was right. You're not going to die. And yet Saul was truly after David. In that, Jonathan was wrong. Well, David swore moreover, verse 3, and said, "Thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes." And he saith, "Let not Jonathan know this, lest Jonathan be grieved. But truly as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death." Oh, Jonathan, you're naive. Your dad doesn't want to upset you. He doesn't want you to be grieved. But he is after me. And there's only a step between me and death. I like this phrase. I have it marked in my Bible. I think it's worthy of underlining. David says, "There is but a step between me and death." That's a great verse to think through. It's a great truth to chew on. We are one step away from eternity. It might be tonight. It might be tomorrow. But all of us are just a moment away from eternity. And I think one of the wisest ways to live life is to, as I have said, live life backwards. That is, think as though any day, every day if possible, is your last one. Do you wish you would have said something to that special person that, hey, you don't know, it might be your last day. You might not have another opportunity to express your heart, or to get things right, or to straighten things out. I think it's a grand and great way to live. We waste so much time doing so many other things. This was in the Oregonian. It just cracked me up. Talking about time that people spend. This is how much time, if you live to be 80, you will spend this much time, 6 days and 2 hours, a cumulative total, 6 days, 2 hours, blowing your nose. So in a lifetime, if you live to be 80, almost a week will be devoted to just that. You'll spend 12 days and 9 hours tying your shoes. I won't. My shoes are often untied. But, oh, this one, though, gets me. You'll spend approximately 1 year looking for lost stuff. I'm way above that. How about this? 19 days and 19 hours taking out the garbage. 3 months and 26 days doing laundry. Now, how about this for redeeming the time? You will spend 2 years and 7 months watching television commercials. 2 years and 7 months watching commercial. Amazing. 8 months opening and going through junk mail. 3 weeks waiting for elevators. 5 years, 8 months, 15 days worrying. That's amazing. And this one also, I must say, doesn't apply to me. This is way, way under. 5 days eating hot dogs. I can do that. I'm way beyond that already. Way, way. In the bathroom, you'll spend over 7 years. Amazing. Time that we spend watching commercials, blowing our nose, reading junk mail, whatever it might be, how about taking a little bit of time to say, you know, this might very well be my last day. What can I tell her? What can I tell him? How can I get right to meet my Lord? There was a guy in my church growing up, a classy gentleman. His name was Jess Moody. He was a Sunday school teacher for a number of years in classes that I was in. And he was just a great guy. He was just normal in every way, size, stature, appearance. And vocationally, he was a foreman at some plant. But hey, he loved God passionately. And when he was on his deathbed in his early 80s, our pastor went to see him right before he passed away, before Jess passed away. And as he was on his deathbed, he was reading his Bible. And our pastor said, "Jess, what are you doing?" And Jesse said, "I'm studying for final exams." Classic answer. I love that. You know, really, it would be good for us to say, what if this is my last week? Or what if this is my last day? Have I given my heart to the Lord? Have I made my investments in things of eternity? Have I been at his table? Have I worshiped him with passion? Have I done what he told me to do, to study like we're doing this evening? Am I ready? David said, hey, Jonathan, you might think everything is hunky-dory, but I know something is true for me. There's only one step between me and eternity. We experienced that Monday, many of us, didn't we? There in Grants Pass at River Valley Church, I believe it's called, used to be the First Baptist Church there in Grants Pass. There was a funeral service for a 31-year-old gal that was going here for the last year and a half, Michelle Richardson, and her husband Dan, also 31. She was graduating summa cum laude this semester from SOU in health fitness PE. She was so energetic and artistic. She was so full of life. And something happened unlike anything I've ever seen before at a service, at a funeral. They had open mics. The church was packed out, every square inch, balcony, people outside. It was amazing. I've never seen anything like this, but they had open mics. And finally, the pastor, at about 2 hours later, had to close it off. Person after person after person came up and shared how this lady, Michelle, touched their lives, whether artistically, garage sales, which I guess she was famous for, and in so many ways, athletically, in the community, all over the board, this gal touched a whole city. And it was an amazing event to sit there for me and watch. Wow. She leaves two young kids behind and a wonderful guy that I've had a chance to really link up with, Dan. And it's interesting because, hey, she was Miss Fitness. She was painting her mailbox when she dropped down dead. All that's to say, the Lord took her. She's in heaven. She's with the Lord. Her testimony resonates throughout the Grants Pass community. Her impact is a legacy. It's an amazing thing. And I thought when I was there, I thought and pondered, my goodness, Lord, I pray that all of our lives might have that kind of impact, where there would be testimonies of witnessing that went out and good deeds that were done. Oh, Lord, help us to realize that each day could be our last one. David said, there's just one step between me and death. David said, Jonathan, you don't understand. I know that you have confidence in your old man, but let me tell you something. There's only a step between me and eternity. Well, Jonathan said to David, well, whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee. What do you want me to do? In light of this, David, obviously you feel that my dad is out to get you. Obviously you feel that you're only one step away from death on any given day. What do you want to do? Well, David said to Jonathan, verse 5, behold, tomorrow is the new moon. And they would have feasts or festivals during the new moon, you see. Tomorrow's the new moon, David said, and I should not fail to sit with the king at meat. I'm always at the king's table. David was part of the king's court, and so he would be expected to be at the table of the king, especially during a new moon festival. So he said, but let me go that I may hide myself in the field until the third day. Prophecy students, you might want to note that. I'm going to hide away till the third day. If thy father, Jonathan, if Saul misses me at all, then say, well, David asked leave of me that he might go to Bethlehem, his home city, for there is a yearly feast there for all of his family. If he say thus, well, that's fine, it's well, then thy servant shall have peace. But if he is angry, if he's upset, if Saul is ticked off that I'm not there at the table, well, then be sure that evil is determined by him. He is out to get me. You'll know, Jonathan, if he says, no biggie that David's not here for the festival at the meal. Okay, but if he gets upset, then you know that he has an agenda, that he has a plan, that he's scheming to do me in, you see. So that's what David asked. David said, "Therefore thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant, for thou hast brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord with thee." Jonathan, we are in agreement. We are bonded. We have cut covenant, like we talked about previously. We're deadly serious about our friendship, aren't we, Jonathan? Notwithstanding, verse 8 goes on to say, "If there be in me iniquity, then you slay me yourself. For why should you bring me before your father?" If you feel that I am worthy of death, Jonathan, then don't bring me to your father. You just kill me right here, right now. You know, stress sires suspicions. Pressure produces paranoia. It's true. When you're under stress, David is. When there's pressure, and David is feeling the pressure and the heat, you can begin to get suspicious. And here, David is actually saying, "Jonathan, if you're in cahoots with your dad, if this is all part of a plan that you're going to get me before him, that he'll wipe me out, then kill me right here. If you think I'm wrong, if you think I'm bad, then kill me right here." You see. Now, Jonathan would never think those thoughts. We know that. But you know what? When there's pressure, I can become a little bit paranoid. We can get a little bit suspicious. Always be careful what you say. Always take lightly the emotions you feel when you're under pressure. Because even David here, he's a little bit paranoid. And he ought not to be. Jonathan has laid down his life for David, actually. But David feels the pressure, and David is saying, "Look, if you're out to get me, then just do it right here. Let's get it over right now." Jonathan said, verse 9, hey, "Far be it from thee. For if I knew certainly that evil were determined by my father to come upon thee, I would tell you." Then verse 10, David said to Jonathan, "Who shall tell me? How am I going to know? Or what if thy father does answer you roughly when I'm not there at his table?" How am I going to know if your dad is upset that I'm not there, which means that he wanted me to be at the table, not to break bread with me, but to break my neck, actually. David knew, you see. How will I know? Jonathan said to David, "Come, let's go out to the field." And they went both of them out to the field. And Jonathan said to David, "O Lord God of Israel, when I have sounded my father, when I've searched out my dad's mind on this, about tomorrow or the third day, behold, if there be good toward David, and I send not unto thee and show it thee, the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. But if it please my father to do evil unto you, I will show it to you. And I'll send you away, David, that you may go off in peace. And the Lord be with thee, as he hath been with my father."
David is learning the value of a good friend, a friend who walks in integrity and does what is right no matter what. We will continue this story on our next program. Please join us again then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
The Searchlight radio program is available as a podcast. This means that you can download the program to your mobile phone, computer, tablet, or other mobile device and listen to it at your convenience. For complete information, please check out the podcast page on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.